This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Hey, would love it if you would just take a quick second and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. That just helps our show find its way to the ears of new athletes. Fun show today. I'm excited to have a super, super talented artist with us to talk about race day photography. Scott Flathouse is the founder and principal shooter editor of Scott Flathouse Photography. He has been shooting race events since 2011, initially working for race media companies like Marathon Photo and Finisher Picks, before launching his own brand. He has had the pleasure to shoot for the name brand industry tri leaders like Quintana Roo, On Running, Rudy Project, and more. And over the years, he has become a local legend in the triathlon media scene. So we are thrilled to talk with him today. Scott, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me. You're much too kind with your words, but I appreciate it. And I'm absolutely thrilled to be here.
Also joining us today is Coach John Mayfield. John is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who leads TriDot's athlete services, ambassador, and coaching programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. John, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, so this is exciting. I think this is the first time we've ever had a guest whose name is actually like a verb. So people talk about getting flathoused, and they get out on the race course. Everybody wants to get flathoused, and
yep.
This first. So we got big time celebrity here.
Are you aware of this, Scott? Are you aware that so Scott is from Texas, like John and I are from Texas, and so he's really a local legend in terms of like every athlete here. If you're running events, if you're a triathlete, everybody knows. Like, if you get a Scott Flathouse photo of yourself from a
Flathoused.
Race, if you get Flathoused, like, it's a big deal. Like, everybody's, like, the quality of his work is to that we all follow Scott on Instagram, we all follow Scott on social media, and if he captures you on course and posts to his account, like, people, flip out over it.
You're going to have a new profile picture on your Facebook.
Exactly, yep, that's exactly right. Well, I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set topic of race photography, and then wind things down with our cool-down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Scott, John, all three of us have done several triathlons and running events in our athletic journeys, and with those events comes the post-race event pictures that were captured by the on-course photographers. So for our warm-up question today, from your race career, what race day photo of yourself is your all-time favorite? And Scott, your first time on the show, so we'll start with you.
Okay, great, thanks. So I sent you a copy of the photo.
Yes,
that's
you did.
My favorite. So it was back when I was doing triathlons. I can't remember if that was my first or second triathlon that I ever did, but it's from the Try to Make a Difference Sprint Triathlon that they hold every year in Amarillo, Lake Tanglewood, just outside of Amarillo. I think we'll get into a little bit about some of my background and how I got into triathlon, but that was one of the first triathlons that was the first triathlon I ever did up in Lake Tanglewood there. And so I was a lot more fit then than I am now, but I also elected to do the bike segment without a shirt, so just tri shorts. And
it's the first thing I noticed.
And so my wife Kara was fortunate enough to be there just outside of transition, and I was off the seat and getting going, and so that's my favorite picture. I look at that and think, wow, you know, I was pretty fit at the time.
Very cool. Coach John Mayfield, what is your favorite race day photograph of yourself?
So actually what comes to mind are two misses that could have been great photos. One, was 2 years ago in Louisville, Ironman Louisville. I was very excited to learn that Scott Flathouse was going to be in Louisville.
So I was hoping to get Flathouse.
I did not get Flathouse somehow. I even saw him on the course. There he was. I'm sure I looked awesome. You know, he was pretty early in the race. I zipped up. I went arrow and was looking all good. And then somehow I got missed. And then tragically, a couple months ago, when you and I had the pleasure of crossing the finish line together, I was so looking forward to seeing this great moment captured where Andrew and I crossed the finish line at Challenge Daytona together. They had two photographers. Neither one of them thought, hey, these guys were wearing the same kit crossing the finish line at the same time.
They clearly know each other.
Right. And we got individual photos. And I think there's like a hand and a foot or something like that. So,
and it wasn't even framed where I could Photoshop it together and make it look like it was remotely taken. Like it was both of us in totally different places.
We were holding hands down the finish chute and no one's ever going to see that.
So. Yeah, it's true. It was precious.
But I have a great one from years ago. It was a really bad race and it was middle of summer, extremely hot, totally blown up, totally toast, turned into a nice long walk. And I was with a buddy of mine, same thing. It was just an awful day. And, it's almost like this paparazzi style photo where I was like putting my hands up and it was in jest, but you know, like don't take my picture because here we are walking and dying and looking horrible. But that turned out to be a great photo. So not the, celebratory hands in the air crossing the finish line. This was much more of a, don't take my picture right now. But now it's a fun one.
Yep. I get it. The one I'll give a shout out to, it's called the Texas Man Tri. And my dad from Florida, he was in town, and my dad and I went out, and he got a real kick being a Florida guy out of doing the Texas Man Triathlon. And the race day photographer that day just got a dope shot of me coming out of the lake in my wetsuit. Like, I had just taken the goggles off, but like my swim cap was still on, the wetsuit was still on. I'm like in mid-stride looking super athletic, like running out of the water, and it was a great profile shot. It was a tight shot. Perfectly in focus. The sun was like, it was just beautifully framed. And it was like to have, usually if there's a photo of yourself coming out of the swim, you look like a soggy, drunken toddler. Like you're awkwardly stumbling out of the lake. Like you don't really know where you're at. Like, cause you've just been swimming for 30 minutes. And so just to have a good wetsuit shot post swim where like you looked athletic and coordinated, like that is such a rarity. It's my Strava profile picture to this day, over all of my Ironman race pictures. That's John's pulling up his phone to look it up right now. Guys, we're going to throw this question out on social media. Make sure you are a part of the I Am Tri-Dot Facebook group. We put these pictures out out every single Monday, to the group, cause we want to hear from you and see what you have to say. And in this case, I would love to see you post, to the group, your favorite race day photograph of yourself. Let's see what you got.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Our main set today is brought to you by Tri-Tats. Whether you're a seasoned Ironman or gearing up for your first local sprint try, Tri-Tats will help you make your mark. These tough, stylish, and easy-to-use race number tattoos make you look and feel like a pro. I personally have raced countless local sprint and Olympic tries where I showed up thinking I had plenty of time to settle in the transition, only to find a massive line waiting to be body marked. Switching to Tri-Tats has allowed me to show up on race morning with my focus on the finish line, not the body marking line. If you have an Ironman race this year, their Iron Tats are made especially for you. Iron Tats body mark you for that one key race and include the all-famous M-Dot logo. Friends don't let friends race with Sharpie on numbers. So as a friend of the podcast, head to tritats.com and use promo code TRIDOT for 10% off your order. Again, that's tritats.com, promo code TRIDOT. So Scott, oddly enough, it might seem counterintuitive, but oddly enough, you were in a hospital bed when you decided to try your first triathlon.
I was.
Take us back to that moment and just share how it led to your first sprint try.
Okay. Well, let me back up a little bit and just
please
set the
do
stage.
Yes.
So I was I think I was in my kind of late 30s. I'd been out of school and been working, so my fitness level had lapsed. And
happens to the best of us. Yep.
And so I at a at a certain point, I decided that I needed to lose some weight and get in shape and start living healthier. And so I did. And I was a runner in high school, so I kind of knew how to run. I loved biking in high school. I still had my old steel Jetane bike.
Nice.
That, yeah. It was great from high school. So I started riding that some more. And over the course of several months, I'd lost 30 or 40 pounds or so.
That's great.
And so I had achieved a certain level of fitness that I was happy with, and I was really just doing it all on my own. I was eating right, and
because that's most of it, unfortunately.
that is most of it. And so at one point, and this was again, we were living in Amarillo, Texas at the time, and at one point I was out in the yard running around with my dogs, and I felt a catch at my knee, and I can't really. I didn't really think too much of it at the time, but the next morning when I jumped out of bed and that leg hit the ground, then I was like, "Ooh, this doesn't
That's not
feel right."
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So long story short, went to orthopedic surgeon. He said I'd torn my meniscus and I needed
playing in the yard with a dog.
Playing in the yard with the dogs. I turned my knee or did something. And so I needed surgery to fix it. So, I get in, it was outpatient surgery. I get in there in the morning. There's this common room where they line up all the anesthesia patients for the day. And I was laying there on the gurney and they were doing all their pre-work and everything. And there was a lady laying next to me and a bunch of other people in the room. And the doctor and the nurses would come in. They would ask for my name and date of birth, as they do, to make sure I'm the right person. And the lady in the gurney next to me overheard me, and she said, "Are you Emma's dad?" And Emma's my daughter, and she was in grade school at the time. And I was like, "Yes, I am." So Flathouse is a somewhat uncommon name. Yeah. And so she explained that her daughter was in the same class as
okay.
my daughter Emma in school, and I guess her daughter had talked about her friend, and so anyway, that's where she recognized the name. So from there, we started talking about, well, you know, just small talk. What are you doing?
What are you in for?
What are you in for? And turned out that she had hurt her back or aggravated a back injury doing this triathlon. And I was intrigued. I was like, "Well, what's a triathlon?"
Uh-huh.
So she told me. She said, "Well, there's this event that they hold where you swim in the lake, and then you bike, and then you run." And that intrigued me. And I guess I was vaguely aware of the Ironman triathlon that you know that they do in Hawaii, you know, every year.
We've heard of it. Yeah.
I kind of remember seeing the Wide World of Sports version uh-huh. of it and stuff, but. It didn't really register. And so, but this sounded a lot of fun. I was like, well, I know how to bike and
even though you were hearing about it from a woman in the hospital because of triathlon,
right.
It still sounded fun.
It still sounded fun. You're right. Had the surgery. It went really well. I talked to the orthopedic surgeon afterwards and I was telling him, you know, what can I do for recovery? And I was really kind of devastated because I knew that it was going to take several weeks to recover. And he said, well, you know, obviously you're not going to be running. I said, well, what about biking? He says, oh yeah, biking's great for it. And I asked him, what about swimming? He said, oh, swimming's the best. You know, that's,
you don't say.
I was like, huh? Okay. So I was determined. I said to myself, I thought, you know what, I'm gonna look up this event and I'm gonna enter it for next year, and this will be my goal for recovery.
My comeback tour.
I recovered from the knee injury. I sort of learned how to swim. At least I learned not to drown.
It's important. Yeah.
So I entered it and just had an absolute blast. It was it was so much fun. Except for the swim part, it was. The 400-yard swim ended up being more like 600 for
naturally,
me because I couldn't sight and didn't
zigzagging
know what I was
across
doing.
The lake.
I did it again the following year, and then there was a few other triathlon events in Amarillo that I entered and participated in. Around 2011 was when I transferred for work to Houston.
Okay.
And so I continued doing some triathlons. I did a triathlon in Austin. And I was working my way up. I did the Woodlands half marathon. And I was thinking, okay, you know, I'll go for the Chevron Houston marathon and just kind of keep pushing. But then that's when I developed a really bad case of plantar fasciitis. Tried everything, went to an excellent podiatrist here in Houston and did all kinds of stuff. It was frustrating, but also about that time, I had started following my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law around to do, you know, as they did some triathlons. And so, they were really into it. And so while I was there, of course, I was taking pictures of them.
Yeah.
And
so this is before you were full-fledged into photography, right?
Right. Okay. So kind of a parallel story. My photography background, I was into photography in the film days.
Okay.
And so I had developed an interest and had a bunch of film equipment. And I kind of got out of it because the digital photography was emerging so fast that it really surpassed the film, and all of a sudden all my film stuff was kind of obsolete. And
now it's vintage. Now it's vintage.
Now
school.
It's vintage, right? Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I sold a bunch of it. I had a Hasselblad camera set up and stuff, and had all my own darkroom stuff. I would do some black and white printing and stuff.
Cool.
That was really kind of cool. But and that took up a lot of time and expense, and I had kids, and so I kind of put that aside, and I wanted to see where the digital photography stuff was going. It was still pretty new back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Yeah. When I started following my sister-in-law and brother-in-law around in around 2011 or so, that's when I really started picking up the digital photography again. So I invested in a decent camera and still had some of my lenses from the film days, so okay. I could still use those.
Yeah.
And
so you would just take pictures of them on course while they were racing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as I got more and more immersed into the triathlon and endurance sport community and in the Houston area, then got to know more people, got to take, you know, pictures of more people. And then I started looking around at these events and seeing the race photographers, and I realized, well, you know what, I could do that. I'm out here anyway.
Yeah.
And so I started contacting some of the companies and saying, hey, you know, I'm a photographer, I'm interested. And so I started getting hired. And I started working some of these events, and it was really kind of cool because it was a way that I could get up early on a Saturday morning, go out to an event, and be home by mid morning or by noon or so.
And see, John, he would get to be a part of it without putting himself through all the torture like we do of running the dang thing. He's a smart guy, right?
So before we go on, I got to ask.
Okay.
Obviously, an adrenaline junkie. Have you taken up any other hobbies after meeting someone in the hospital? So what are you in for? Yeah, I'm going to try that. Like, was that a one off thing, or any other hobbies that you've taken up?
So that was kind of a one off thing.
Skydiving, rock climbing. Never haven't met anyone in the.
I used
emergency
to do
room.
Some of that stuff. I've skydived before. Nice. I broke my arm skydiving, so kind of put that behind me. But
he was the guy in the hospital.
I was
getting somebody else interested.
Yeah,
in skydiving.
It was great. It was awesome. You got to try it sometime.
Yeah. No, I'm done with skydiving. I think been there. Done
me
that,
too. But, never done it.
Yeah. Just got into years of shooting race day events and portrait shoots with athletes. What are a few of the most memorable experiences as a race photographer?
So one of the thing that immediately comes to mind is the Alaska Man triathlon that I shot. So Aaron Palayan is a race director, and he was in the Houston area for many years and founded the Bayou Cities Triathlon Series. And so one of his Ventures was starting a series of extreme triathlons. And the first one he founded was the Alaska Man Extreme Triathlon. And as soon as he announced that and I started seeing some of the materials off of that, it was intriguing.
Yeah, do you need a photographer?
Yeah. So I knew Aaron. I'd worked for him for a few years. And so we got to talking, and we worked out a deal where I'd go up there. And I ended up bringing my two older daughters along, who were in high school at the time.
Cool, yeah.
And rented some cameras for them to use as well. So we went up there as a photography team. There were some other local photographers in Alaska and some from Houston who made the trip too. But for me and my two daughters, that was just an unbelievable trip. For those who have been there, they know, but it's surreal almost. Mm-hmm. The scenery and the landscape and everything. And Aaron did a fantastic job of laying out the course and picking the venues and stuff.
Yeah.
And, I still, look back on those photos and it's just amazing. One memory in particular that's bizarre to me about that was we were by the side of the road. I forget the name of the highway, but it had the inlet, the ocean in the background, and so the bikes were coming by, and we were sitting there shooting the bikes as they go by. As I usually am, I'm usually in some kind of a ditch or something, and I heard this rustling in the grass next to me, and I thought we were worried. We were aware of bears, and there were all kinds of warnings and stuff about bears, and so we had bear spray and stuff, but this was in the grass and just kind of rustling beside me as I was shooting the photos, and I was thinking, Alaska doesn't have snakes, do they? I don't think they do.
Alligator, crocodile,
As time went by, I looked down and there's this little black bunny rabbit just kind of. Sitting there,
hanging out,
yeah. And my two daughters were kind of over by the car, and we were parked in a kind of a gravel area. And there was another rabbit that was just kind of hopping around. So we had some strawberries in the car that we had left over from snack or lunch or something. And they broke those out, and they were holding it out. The rabbits would just come up and eat out of your hand. It's like, what are these wild rabbits and that's how the wildlife was in Alaska. It's they're not afraid of people, or it didn't seem to be scared of us. We also saw at the resort the day after the triathlon and right before the awards ceremony, as people were gathering, there was a black bear, a mother black bear, and three little cubs that were kind of hanging around the resort, and everybody was taking pictures, and they had one of the resort managers. He was keeping people away.
Life in Alaska.
Life in Alaska. Yeah. Just
here we get coyotes.
So my experience was kind of like yours. I saw the announcement of that race. I was like, this is fantastic. I don't want to do this, but I want to be a part. And especially when they said you had to have support on the mountain, I was like, that's my role. That's
did you try
what
to talk
do.
Any of your athletes into doing that race?
Well, I did. I had one of my athletes that was doing it, and so, yeah, I got to go and do it. And where I feel gyps got was, I'm like the only person there who never saw a bear. Most people, they prepared us for months. They had like these monthly webinars leading into the race, all this and that, and again, buy the bear spray and watch out for the bears.
Wow.
So like, we were all kind of like scared of the bears. And then everybody started seeing him, and the bear like wasn't a big deal. And I was like, I didn't get to see the bear, so I kind of feel gypped. But
you just gotta go back now, right?
I guess. Yeah. Let's do it again.
Gotta talk to another athlete in the last one. So Scott, so we kind of heard your history in the sport, how you got started as a triathlete, how you transitioned into photography from being a triathlete. So now that we have you in your timeline as an experienced race day photographer, can kind of just talk us through your process. When race day comes, it's a little bit more in depth than just kind of posting somewhere we're up in a ditch and snapping the pics. Just kind of walk us through how you prepare for race day and what a day out on the course is like for you.
Okay, sure. So I've got two camera bodies that I take with me.
What do you shoot with?
So I shoot with a Canon system.
Okay.
And there's a huge rivalry, or there has been, between Canon and Nikon, and now Sony and all the mirrorless cameras are kind of entering the mix too. But I started using Canon years ago, and so over the years as I've evolved, it's just easier for me to stick with the brand. It's a good brand. Really, my routine starts the night before. I make sure I have batteries charged. I make sure that I have memory cards that are ready to go. I also, once the batteries are charged, I sync the time on my camera bodies to make sure that I have the correct time. And now that we've got daylight savings time, I'll have to remember to do that. Yeah, to do, do that again. I lay everything out the night before, and that way, in the morning when I go, one thing that I've learned in the Houston humidity is that if I leave my stuff in the air conditioned house, and then I pack it up in the car and go to the race site, and it's cold when I pull it out of the bag, the lenses will fog up
immediately. Yeah,
immediately. And so what I've learned is that I need to leave the stuff out in the garage or on the back porch or something so that it doesn't,
it's been in the elements.
It's been in the elements, been warmed up. Little photo tip there for
everybody. Yeah, for sure.
And then I usually plan to get into place well below, if there's any traffic restrictions or anything, then I try to figure out when those are and get positioned prior to that, obviously.
Yeah. Have you scouted your locations out in the days leading up, or?
Yeah. So for most of the races around the Houston area, I've been to, and I kind of know the areas, and I kind of know where I like to be and all. If it's a new race, then I'll go on Google Maps and check out the different spots. I might also even, drive the course the day before or the week before or something just to make sure things look good. I always try to avoid, don't like to have power lines or, anything in the background like that. Try to avoid dumpsters and porta potties and, cars if I can, park cars or driving cars.
Yeah.
I kind of like the wide open shots where there's a lot of horizon and sky to work with. So I've got some preferences that I'll scout out or once I get to a spot, usually it's still dark. it depends on the race, but I like to bring music. I've got a portable Bluetooth speaker that I'll put out. Because you're
out there, depending on the race, I mean, anywhere from a couple hours to what, 8, 9, 10 at some of these Ironman events. Are you on course all day long when the sun goes down, and keeping yourself entertained all day?
For the full Ironman events, I usually take breaks because while people are out on the bike, that can
you don't
be
have aid stations,
and,
so you
yeah. And usually the light is better early in the morning and then later in the afternoon as well. So midday light is generally not the best light either. But I'll take breaks for full Ironman events.
Okay.
Half Ironmans are usually over by
2 or 3
midday. Yeah. So I'll stick around for most of those. But the speaker really is. Mostly what I've learned is that over the years, people say, well, I never saw you out in the course, or I never, where were you? I didn't, I'm like, well, I...
You didn't hear me?
you didn't hear me.
I was with the rabbits.
With the rabbits. So I've started wearing, some goofy hats sometimes or, playing, I've thought about getting, a banner or a flag or something just so people are aware of, hey, Here I am. I'm not trying to hide, really. But
pose. Look good. This is your moment.
That's what you really need is more like that 100-yard marker saying flat house ahead. Zip it up, clean the nose, and get ready for your shot.
You're 100 yards away from getting flat housed.
On, say, a 70.3 type event, how many shots are you getting in a day?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Great question. So I was looking back over some of my previous races that I've done, and For a half Ironman, I'll get about 6,000 or 7,000 shots. For a full, it might be. I really don't do too much more than that in a full. But yeah, about maybe 8,000 or 9,000. The most I've done in a day was when I was working for Brightroom, which is now Marathon Photo, and I was covering the BPMS 150. And I was sitting in Fayetteville as the bikers come by, and I don't know how many they have, like 25,000 riders.
Jeez.
I took I took about 20,000 photos in a single day.
Did your finger get tired?
It did. My hands were just cramped. And wow. Fortunately, they supplied their own equipment. And so I was using their cameras and stuff. But, man, that was a long day. And and that's where I decided I really want to focus more on quality rather than than quantity, because that wasn't fun. You know, I was getting paid by the hour. And So
yeah, these guys are out on the race course and they're working hard, obviously, but I think sometimes they don't appreciate those of us on the sidelines, the photographers, the coaches and all that, that it's a long day for us too.
It's a very long day.
Like I said, we don't have aid stations, so we got to kind of plan ahead. And
I usually end up taking between 30 and 40,000 steps on race day. So doing that, those days where you're taking 20,000 photos for a different company, that kind of led you to want to branch out and do your own thing. So now your approach on race day is a little bit different. You're trying to be a little bit more artistic. You want to walk away with high quality images. So what are you looking for, you know, out on the race course now?
So yeah, that's a great question. So when I was working for a lot of these photo companies,
they're trying to get a picture of every single athlete coming by.
They're going for volume. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And nothing wrong with that. That's, you know, if you participate, then you want to make sure you got some photos. And so they've got some guidelines that they want their photographers to follow. And, you know, when I'm working for somebody else, I'm more than happy to adhere to, you know, whatever they want. But a lot of them seem like, you know, they want the head-on bike shots. They want the, you know, head-on run shots and stuff. And that's great. And those are easy.
It's not artistic, though, Scott.
Well, it's easy to get.
Yeah.
And they can look kind of cool and stuff, too. But what I realized was that when I was out just kind of shooting my friends and people I knew and stuff, I thought, well, let me just try this and see if I can get some panning shots of a profile shot of the bike. And so I worked on that a little bit, and I was able to get some good shots, and I started posting those, and people went nuts. They loved it.
Yeah.
And just because I guess it was relatively uncommon. And
now it's the picture that all of us as athletes would want of ourselves. Because you look cool. You can see my cool bike. You can see my cool expensive wheels. You can see my cool expensive helmet.
People spend a lot on the bike and make it look good. And they do look cool, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's the best way to show it, is in that profile shot. And so I started doing some of that, and I realized that, well, you know, if I want to continue this, and if people want me to continue this, then I got to do it on myself, because if I'm shooting for
the companies, you know,
they're not wanting that. It is a tougher shot to get. It's a kind of a lower percentage shot, and of those 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 or 9,000 or 10,000 shots that I might do, very few of those are actually ones that I think are sufficient quality. And
yeah, because for people who aren't photographers, I want them to understand. Okay, so a cyclist is coming by at 18 to 22 miles an hour. So as that bike is moving alongside of the road, you're having to keep that cyclist squared up in the center of your frame with your camera. So as they're going by, you're trying to pan at the same speed.
Right.
And so your shutter speed on your camera, I'm assuming, is set very quickly to try to get some nice crisp images as they're going by, right?
Well, so we can dive into a little bit of the technical details here, but so initially, yes, that I wanted to use a really fast shutter speed to make sure that I you know, froze the action but since then my thinking has evolved a little bit, and I've tried to use a little bit slower shutter speed because I want to see the
movement,
the blur on the spokes. So when I go back and look at some of my early pictures, and the spokes are frozen in space, it looks like they're just sitting there balanced on the bike, standing still.
You don't get the sense of motion.
And you don't, you don't get that sense of motion. So the trick for me is that, and when people are riding their bikes and they're in the aero position, their head and shoulders and arms are generally not moving.
At least we hope that.
if I can pan and match their speed and get the focus on their face and on their head, and still maintain a little bit of blur in the legs or the spokes on the wheels, then that for me is kind of the goal shot that I'm going for.
No, that makes sense. That totally makes sense to get that sense of movement
right.
as they're going by, to convey that in a photo. That makes sense to me. So I'm glad I asked that. I'm glad we had that follow up. So Scott, there are events all over the state of Texas. We know where you're based. There's many races across the United States that are worth traveling to and photographing, like ones in Alaska. How do you decide each and every year which races you're going to go to and shoot?
So that is a tough question for me. There's so many options. And of course, last year with the pandemic, and even this year to some extent, it's been tough because I've planned to go to events, and I went up to Lubbock fully intending to shoot the Ironman 70.3 Lubbock last year, and it didn't, it got post or canceled at the last minute.
But you still got some good shots out there on the course that day.
There were other people like me who traveled there and they decided to do the course anyway. And so, I thought, well, I'm here anyway, so I'm out there. But it is tough to decide. There are so many cool events. And the ones in Texas are pretty easy. And we're amazingly fortunate to have some excellent races.
Yeah,
so obviously,
a lot of great events.
Galveston, Ironman Texas, Waco, and Lubbock. Four Ironman events in one state. It's it's fantastic. I've started to branch out, and I tried to. Of course, I've got a full time job, and I've got a family, and I've got kids that were in high school or will be in high school, and they've got activities as well.
Yeah.
So it's not like I can take off every weekend and just go to events as much as I'd love to, My wife and I, we've talked and decided that, if we could plan, do the Texas events and then plan on maybe one or two larger or more expensive trip type events.
Yeah.
And so in 2019, we went to Louisville and did the Ironman Louisville, which turned out to be the last one.
The one where John raced it and was hoping to get flat housed.
And I fell down on the job. Don't know what happened, but
we won't blame you. It's a long day. It's a long, long day.
And I just got to keep racing. That's why I keep racing.
There are just so many cool races. Mm-hmm. The Challenge Series is that looks to be like a really cool event. So Challenge Daytona and Miami just happened. Looking at those for next year.
Very cool. Yeah, John and I went to that one, and we had a lot of trotted athletes at Challenge Daytona. We had Coach Jeff Raines just raced Challenge Miami. Very, very, very cool. I actually grew up pretty close to Daytona International Speedway, pretty close, like an hour and change away. But so I had been to the track a lot as a kid for NASCAR events and stuff, and so I knew how big that track is. And to be out there on your bike and to be out there running around that track was pretty cool. So that would be pretty good spot for
a nice,
for some
nice
cool
backdrop for that
one.
So, and I gotta say, I'm racing Ironman Florida this year, so my vote for is Ironman Florida. We can try this again.
Okay,
I get that great shot, and I can finally do what I've said for years. I can retire from Ironman racing. But of all these events that you go to, maybe you've been once, maybe you go every year, what are a couple of your favorites and why?
So, one of my favorites every year is Ironman Texas, and I can't remember the first year. I think it was 2016 when I first went to Ironman Texas. And by that time, I had done Galveston a couple times just kind of on my own. And it's fun being part of the energy and the atmosphere and everything. But, man, when I got to Ironman Texas and Hippie Hollow and Moxie Bridge, and it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe just the
energy,
the energy and the spirit and the crowd, and And it was really cool. Not only that, but also all the international people. So being the North American Championships, you attracted all kinds of people from all over the world.
Yeah.
And it was really an amazing event. And so I've always loved going to Ironman Texas, and to be honest, the other events, it's hard to find that same atmosphere to match it. Mm-hmm. Obviously every event's got its own flavor and its own energy as well, but I still love the Ironman Texas.
Yeah, I go to most of the Ironman races every year, and you're absolutely right. Each one kind of has its own unique feel, which is really cool. Every venue is different, the energy. But yeah, even though I think we're both a little biased, being being hometown, it's certainly one of the best, and yeah, it's a great one. So looking forward to getting one of these days, finally getting Andrew to.
I haven't even been to it yet as a spectator, as close as, so I'm, you know, I live 4 hours north in Dallas. And so when I was looking at, okay, I want to do an Ironman, you know, which one should I sign up for? I looked at Ironman Florida. I looked at Ironman Arizona. I knew I don't have the bike legs to do anything super hilly. So I was looking at some of the more friendly, you know, bike courses, and I just kept hearing from people that the course and the crowd and the venue is just untouchable in Texas and in the Woodlands. And so that's for me, that was the tiebreaker compared to signing up for Florida or signing up for Arizona, is that I kept hearing, Scott, exactly what you're saying. And I haven't gotten to race it yet. I mean, just we don't always date our shows. We don't always give away when we recorded it versus when a show publishes. We are recording this episode fairly recently from the time that Ironman Texas got canceled for 2021. So I'm still a little salty there.
For the third time.
For the second time. For the third time. Yeah, because last fall as well. So I'm still dealing with those emotions a little bit.
Four
internally.
Four times the charm. We're gonna get you there.
Yeah. So one day, Scott, I'll be on course and you'll be on course, and hopefully I get flat housed while I'm out there. So we'll see.
We could even pose this to your audience. It's like what course do they think is better than Ironman Texas?
Are there any? That,
yeah.
Yeah. Bring it.
And if so, let me know, because, I want to go there.
All right, John Mayfield, the Monday this show comes out, I'm going to post the warm-up question, and you can post a poll.
All right.
On what people think the best venue is for Ironman.
Who's bigger than Texas?
No one, except for Alaska.
Or who's more fun than Texas, right? So, yeah.
So, Scott, you know, a large part of the art of photography is the editing process, and you will often share time-lapse videos of yourself editing a good race photo, which is super cool, after you leave a race. And you have thousands of photos on your memory cards, which you set anywhere from 7,000 to 8,000 to 9,000. You know, so when you get into the editing process and you've got all those photos, what's kind of the process like from there on creating the mint Scott House, Scott Flat House images?
Sure. So in carrying forward this line of thinking, where I really decided I want to go more for quality than quantity, at one point I started looking through some photos, and I'd pick out a few, and I'd say, well, all right, you know, these are good photos. They're sharp. They're in focus. They've got the motion blur that I, you know, want. But let me just play around with them and bring them into Photoshop and see what I can do.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I'll replace the sky in Photoshop, or maybe I say, okay, I need to clean up the background a little bit. There may be a trash can or power lines or something that I need to get rid of. And let me spend some time on it and really get it, see what I can do to get it looking good.
To perfect it, yeah.
Yeah, and so so I started doing that. And again, I would post those and got huge response. I mean, you know, people loved it. And I was like, okay, let me continue. Obviously, I can't do that for
every photo.
Every photo, but you know, I can pick some. So people who have really cool looking bikes or kits or famous pros or then I would take their photos and work it a little bit in Photoshop and post it to my Instagram account. And so I got some, started getting some tremendous feedback from that. And so I've continued doing that. And then somewhere along the line, I thought, well, okay, let me do some screen recordings of this.
Yeah.
And
kind of show people the process a little bit.
Show people the process. And then nobody wants to watch for 45 minutes while I'm doing it. So I compressed it into, you know, 30 seconds or a minute. And those are kind of fun.
I think it's super fun. So I brought it up. It's also a little bit of what a more advanced version of what I do. So
yeah. So those take time to make and to bring into the video editor and stuff. So I don't do that very often. But and then sometimes what you're seeing there are edits where I have a pretty good idea of exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of times I'll go in to start editing a photo and I'll get stuck or I'll change my mind and trash it and start over. So obviously I'm not doing time lapse of those.
Of all of them.
So, but where I have a pretty good idea about what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it, I'll periodically record a time lapse and put that out there.
No, very, very cool. Scott, from your years of covering the Texas endurance sports scene, you know, we've talked about how you always go to certain Texas races. You do a lot of the Texas races. There's tons of great ones here. You know, you travel for some. But, you know, in that time, I mean, you've really gotten to know the athletes in this space, you know, whether they're cyclists, whether they're triathletes, whether they're pure runners. And you know, so you really get a front row seat opportunity to cheer athletes on through your lens on race day. You know, how much would you say the relationships you've built in the sport mean to you as you pursue race photography as an art form?
Oh, it's huge. I think we're really fortunate to live in the greater Houston area where there is a tremendous sense of community in the endurance sport area. And I've developed a number of friendships with people across the area and really there's people around the world that I correspond with and I've gotten to know, and there's no way that I would know this guy in Greece or somebody in the UK or somewhere without having that connection of triathlon or endurance sport. It's really been fantastic for me as a way to connect with the endurance sport community.
So over your years, you've shot thousands of photos of thousands of athletes. So you obviously know what makes a good race day photo. So as athletes, what can we do to help you? What can we do to make our race day photos as good as possible?
Because there's a lot of times where, I mean, I'm whether I'm running or biking, out of the corner of your eye, you see the photographer coming up. And it's kind of like, oh, do I pose? Do I look as arrow as possible? What can athletes do to help you have the photo come out even better?
Oh, great question. So inevitably, and I don't know what it is, but a lot of people seems like they'll see me, you know, and a lot of times I'll have my car parked by the side of the road and for some reason, people think that's the time to get a drink from their water bottle or to open up a gel or get out of there. No, don't do that.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the kind of photo that you want. So if you want, you know, kind of the serious hardcore, then just stay in arrow and you know, maybe burn a few matches or something and get up to speed. Yeah.
Get those calves really flexing.
Yep. I also have a lot of fun with people who go by and, you know, they'll flash
the hang loose or give me
a thumbs up or, and there's one of my favorites was, 2018 Ironman Texas. I was out on the Hardy Toll Road and there was a guy went by and he did the kind of the boudoir, you know, went to his side and, you know, put his hand up. And you can see that photo. Right now it's the banner photo of the Pathetic Triathletes Facebook group.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it's really cool. One of my most popular photos ever. It's a lot of fun. So if you want to try to replicate that pose, be more than happy to shoot you as a good
Make
going.
It famous. Yeah.
But yeah, so either stay an arrow and look serious, or you know, give me a thumbs up or a peace sign or hang loose or something, and have fun with it.
So Scott, I'm sure there are folks listening today that are like me and are just really into photography themselves. You know, maybe they already take pictures for their friends or for their training partners, or maybe they aren't yet but are super interested in doing so. What advice or tips do you have for capturing great images of athletes on race day?
Oh, another great question. So I'm a pretty firm believer in that in general in life, if you want to get good at something, then you got to do it over and over and over again. And
so, was it the 10,000 hour rule? Is that what it is?
Yeah, 10,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been doing race photography and it really, you know, it kind of comes natural. I kind of know what to do it, but what I've realized though is that, you know, a lot of people just are waiting for their friends to come by and Sherpa or spectating mm-hmm. on a triathlon is a lot of hurry up and wait,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? So you're waiting, and then all of a sudden they show up and they run by, and maybe you're not ready with the camera, or maybe And so, so I see a lot of that where, you know, people have missed, their husband
person.
Or wife
yeah.
or their person they're looking for. And, so one thing I would suggest is that, as you're waiting for whoever you're trying to get, just go ahead and practice shooting everybody. So memory cards are cheap and you can always delete the photos later or whatever, but you know, get that, get a feel for the pace. And
those people won't think you're weird. They're used to people taking pictures of them on course. They'll probably just think you're a race photographer.
Yeah, they
probably
so.
Yeah. and really the equipment that, you know, I use some expensive camera gear, but you don't have to use expensive camera gear. And a lot of people use their phones and stuff. And, but yeah, just, I would say just practice getting those shots and eventually you'll get a better feel for it and you'll get better at it.
And when they come by, you'll be ready for them instead of
That's
missing
right.
them potentially. Yeah. And I think, and kind of going back to John's question, because before we even started recording, we were talking about the race day tattoos, right?
Right.
Is just in terms of like bib, you know, because as triathletes, we're wearing our bib number, you know, the numbers on our bib, the numbers on our bike, the numbers on the tattoos, sometimes the numbers sharpied. What is the easiest way for your camera to see our number? Is there like optimal positioning for our race day tattoo numbers or anything like that?
Please wear race day tattoos. Those are the greatest invention for photographers.
So they really are that helpful?
They really are.
Okay.
So as we're going through the 6,000 or 7,000 photos that we take, it's so much easier to identify bib numbers with the race day tattoos. That's my appeal to athletes everywhere.
I was just I don't know what made me think of that. I was like, we need to bring this up on air. I'd like to have everybody here. If you're not going out and buying your tri-tats or whatever it is that you're putting on your body, it really does make a difference, and it heightens the chances that the photographer can get those pictures to you afterwards, right?
Yeah, for sure. So as far as the placement goes, since I do shoot a lot of bike photos, the side of the leg or the side of the arm where your kit doesn't cover it up.
Yeah.
The tattoos. So so nowadays a lot of people have ink. And so if you have real tattoos, then make sure you get the race day tattoos or the temporary tattoos that have the white border around it. So that really helps distinguish it from real tattoos. I will say they just look cool, you know.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And then the extra bonus from the temporary tattoos is you get that cool sunburn, you know, profile that you get to keep for several days afterwards.
So you go out to the restaurant afterwards. So what's that on your arm?
Yeah, what is 375? What? You
know, one more.
Did you
souvenir.
Do a triathlon or something?
Yeah.
One additional souvenir from the day. Scott, all of us athletes, you know, we love getting quality images of ourselves after a race. That's why it's such a big deal if you get flat housed. Because anything worth doing is obviously worth Instagramming afterwards. So, you know, from all the value that we as athletes get out of having great photographers like yourself on course, what can we do as athletes to support our local area race photographers?
So obviously, you know, if if you go to an event and they have a photographer and they offer the photos for sale, then, you know, please, by all means, you know, and if the photos are good and you like the photos, then,
yeah,
then, you know, go ahead and spend the money and purchase the photos.
Does that go to the photographers?
It depends. So, yeah. You know, ultimately the photographers are getting paid somehow.
Okay.
They're either hired directly by the event or they work for photography company that is contracted by the event. So, but it really helps. I see a lot of people, they'll screenshot the stuff with the watermark on
yep.
it. And, you know, I understand why people do that. But at the same time,
as we've said, you're getting up early. You have expensive equipment that you're using. You're taking your time, your expensive equipment,
your
to secure that
morning.
Image.
Yeah.
Even your time to put that watermark on it, so that it's not basically stolen from that. So yeah, I think that's a very good point to make, and probably something that probably people may not even realize that they can be doing that. So I think that's a great point to make and make that distinguishment that it's not maybe just taking a screenshot, but that's actually something that those photographers, that is their art form. It's something they did. It's they took their time, their money, actual dollars to create those.
So more of the story, everybody. Support your local photographers. Buy a race photo. you know, if you like one, if there's one that you're like, you know what, I'd love to throw that out on the gram, throw it out on the Facebook. You know, love that as a profile picture for a few weeks. You know, spend a 10, 9, 20, you know, whatever it is, and walk away with a photo. I'll usually get one. Particularly from the bigger events, but even a sprint, like I said, I mean, one my Strava profile picture, the one I gave a shout out to, just a local race where the photographer got a great shot, me coming out of the water, and I was like, yeah, I'll buy that, I'll spend some money on that, and I think at the end of the day, that it's such a small fraction compared to the other things we spend money on in
yeah,
this sport,
sure.
Right? So it's totally worth it.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
So, Scott, we covered a lot of ground today talking about your adventures in race day photography, but we didn't go too deep into your own triathlete career. Before we wrap up and call it a day, I just kind of want to give you a chance to share a little wisdom from your own experiences as a triathlete. You mentioned that you started with very little experience. It took some work for you to get ready to swim your first 400-meter open water swim, and you kind of worked hard at the sport from there to progress in your ability and the distances you were racing. So for the folks in the audience who are currently where you were earlier in your tri career, you know, they're still figuring the sport out, or maybe they just have a race or two under their belt and they're trying to improve and progress. You know, what were a few of the things that made a big difference for you early on as you were growing and improving as a triathlete?
So one, reflecting on my experience in getting involved in triathlon, I was really doing it on my own,
yeah,
for the most part. Like I said, I did get some help here and there, but I was just out there doing runs by myself, and I didn't know how to work out really.
Yeah,
I didn't know how to train, and I thought, okay, well, let me just run today. I feel like biking today. I really need to get a swim in.
And that was me before Tri-Dot.
It was like,
well, what do I feel like doing today? What's the weather outside? Is it a good day for a run?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how far do I run? How fast do I run? You know, so all those things, I was just winging it at the time. I think nowadays the coaching opportunities and the different programs that are available are amazing, and I really appreciate the Tri-Dot approach and the data driven approach that they have for training. My background is in engineering, and so that really appeals to me.
Oh,
but,
really? Look at
yeah.
that.
So, but also is, you know, as I look around today, there are so many good triathlon teams
and clubs and
absolutely. Things, and so many resources. And I would highly encourage anybody who's thinking about getting involved into triathlon is joining one of these teams. Find a good one that has a good mix of experienced triathletes and also new triathletes. So you've got other people who are learning with you. There is so much that I think I missed out on by not being a part of a larger triathlon community. There were some smaller ones there in Amarillo. It's not really a hotbed of triathlon activity, but if you are in one of these larger metropolitan areas, Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, then there are plenty of teams out there who are willing to help out. And and plus, these teams, you generally get the benefit of having, you know, maybe some cool kits and and other perks as well. So a lot of times teams have discounted entries into races and other things as well. So that's what I would highly encourage anybody who's looking to get involved in triathlon is go ahead and find a good team.
Don't community. Do it alone.
Yeah. Don't do it alone.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Scott Flathouse and TriDot coach John Mayfield for talking to us about race day photography. Head to scottflathousephoto.com for more information about Scott, and be sure to follow Scott Flathouse Photo on social media to follow his work. You'll see all the examples of the top-notch photos with the motion-blurred wheels that we talked about on the show today. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast and click on leave us a voicemail to get your voice on the show asking a question. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.